Let's join the guys who are back from their vacation. Tim Luke and Greg Straub, the appraisal guys, a frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This. You can always find them at their website, tqag.com, or right here on Robinhood Radio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So Jill sent me a message here. She probably doesn't like the direction I take when I go off on my tangents here to ask you, but this is specifically for you, Tim, okay? And what she says to me is, apparently with the pandemic, there are certain rules that have been relaxed to allow museums to sell works of art. And she puts it here, Brooklyn and Baltimore come to mind. She wants you to talk about that a little bit.
Well, yes. And actually, there's an article that just came out that I was looking at on the about the Baltimore Museum and selling their collections. And I think that part of that is you have to look at it as what the institution has to do what they need to do. Some of the rules, and what Jill is referring to, is that some of the rules are that once they've been donated and accepted into the collection, that usually they cannot be sold for any reason. And what they're doing is that they are relaxing some of this because they are in a financial crunch. And this is a unique situation. This is something that was not brought on by, it's like a, what do they call that, Greg? It's a, kind of an act of God. It would be almost in the insurance world too. It's something
is that what they call like force majeure?
Something like that. Yes, I think you are correct. I don't quote us on that, but I know it's these extenuating circumstances that go beyond anything that you could have imagined, and it's similar to what I'm going through with my benefit auctions and doing all this, is that you don't foresee that there's going to be a pandemic and that you have to reschedule, but you still need to raise money. So what are we doing in the nonprofit world? I'm doing a virtual auction for a social services organization next Friday, and virtually, and I'm doing it from home. So they're going to beam me in, and they're working on that. We've been putting that together. With the museums, it's very similar. Is that they have budgets. They still have to run their organization, and they have a lot of deficits. And I'm sure that it is very difficult for the board and for the supporters of the museum to realize this, but there are ways to make this happen. And I think that it just depends on where you stand. The traditional museumists, you know, the museum lovers, oh, wait, you should never be doing this, never doing this. But then there's the other side, which I also understand, and we have a number of friends who are in the museum world that are just saying they're hurting and they do need support. So it's one of those things that it's not like they're doing a barn sale and they're selling everything.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to end up seeing the Mona Lisa going on the auction block, you know?
Right. Well, I think they're being selective and probably going through their collection and culling it and saying, what could we possibly that would be attractive and what could we do? And I think that it also just goes out to a lot of museums are trying to do virtual tours and showing things and going online and holding little workshops. I know several museums, I've attended a few virtually. And if there's any way that you can go out and support those museums, I think that it's very important to do at this time, because if it's easy to do social distancing, but also you're supporting this nonprofit. And, you know, just like what we're doing is we try to support a lot of our local businesses that have just been really hit by not being able to get the traffic or the people coming in. So we've been, no surprise, we've been supporting our local wine shop instead of, you know, doing what we can instead of buying like big box stores.
Well, you know, what's
like
interesting with this DX, you know, about 2 years ago, I think about 2017, the Berkshire Museum in Pittsfield planned to sell, and like Norman Rockwell paintings and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to raise $55 million. There was a lot of fighting back and forth. Finally, the state of Massachusetts got involved and let them do it. I think they raised between $40 and $50 million, and they changed the basic layout of the museum to make it more of a family type museum, not just an art museum. I'll tell you what, there was a lot of consternation, not only throughout the Berkshires, but throughout the country when the Berkshire Museum decided to do this and they finally got the go ahead. And they said, listen, this is the only way we can survive.
Right. Well, I will tell you that when we, it's probably been 10 or so years back, we were on the collections committee for one of the local historic museums here. And everything depends on the what is the mission statement and what is the focus of the museum. Now, there are museums that have things in their art in their collections that might not necessarily fit their overall mission as to what they are going to display. And I think that would probably logically be the easiest and the first step in trying to deaccession something in a case like this pandemic. But I think where the problem, well, I got the dilemma, I should say, comes in is when you decide, someone on the board decides, well, we need to raise $25 million, so let's sell our most valuable pieces. And I think that has a lot to do with the decisions that are made and where a lot of the infighting comes in.
But also, if you remember, Greg, when we would go to, for the decade that we went up to Wheeling, West Virginia, to the Ogilvy, the Mansion Museum and the Glassworks Museum, and they have a very strict policy of what it is that they're looking for, what needs to go into the collection. They don't take anything in unless it does go, unless it belongs there. But that's been the regime for the last 10 years. Prior to that, and prior directors, prior boards, you know, they may have things in the collection that they could look through and say, ah, maybe we could call some of this and go through it. And now is the time, you know, I mean, now it's much more, I would say, palatable, because they're looking at, wait, look, revenues are down. This is what's going on. People can't go out. We do need to raise these funds. And in order to maintain, and that's really, I think, what a number of museums are looking for, is how do we maintain our mission, our strategy, and stay afloat and keep our employees here and also maintain the collection? Because a lot of people think, well, if it's in the museum, it's being taken care of. But it costs an awful lot for the storage, for the heating, the air conditioning, the security of the building, the staffing.
And the conservation and all of that.
Yes, yes.
So I just know that at this particular museum, when we got involved and we started going through the collection, they were trying to raise money to build a new museum. And the collection itself, this was prior to when people would just say, well, I'm going to leave my collection to a museum, and the museum would just say, okay, we'll take it. Well, a lot of the things didn't really even have any pertinence to what the focus of the museum was. So when it came time to choose the, shall we say, the wheat from the chaff, it became a fight. Because it's in a museum. I donated it to the museum. We want to see it. We want to see our stuff in the museum. So, and that's just on a small scale. On a larger scale, I can't even begin to imagine the fighting that goes on in a place like the Metropolitan Museum or any of the major art museums in the world. But this is an issue that has come up and it has to be dealt with. And I think I think we're just scraping the top here. And I think I think we have to really stay on top of this and find and do a lot of we're going to have a lot of research and a lot of study to do to figure out what the impact is going to be down the road.
Well, I think also, Greg, what goes on behind the scenes is that you have the board, and it comes down to the bean counters and the artistic people. Is that there is a
right brain, left brain,
right brain, left brain, exactly. Is that we need the cash, we need to do this, and the art and museum professionals saying, wait a minute. No, we can't let go of everything, but let's look at this in a way. Here are some things, and let's look at this in a different perspective. And I'm sure that they do need to have, and it's very vital to have that input before a decision is made. And, you know, because they also have to look at, well, what's going to be attractive in an art market? Because here's the other thing that you have to remember about a museum. Is just because it's in a museum doesn't mean it's valuable.
Yes.
And we've had to get that across to a lot of our clients and said, oh, I saw a similar one at this particular museum. And it really just depends on what it is. It could be there just to illustrate a particular, whatever their mission is. So there's a lot that goes into the decision of selling this, and a lot of angst and a lot of hand-wringing, I'm sure, from the museum staff and from the artistic staff, where the bean counters are like, okay, yeah, what is that going to, how much is this, and what could we expect, and here's what we need, and how do we turn this, like the Berkshire Museum said, well, we're going to sell this, but we also need help, or the Rockwell
yeah.
In what they were doing is that, okay, we're going to build almost a fundraising campaign around this. And that's very, that's thinking outside of the box and making it work. And I would imagine that when these museums do this, and I haven't read the article about the Baltimore Museum, because it's funny that you brought that up, Marshall, because I was just scrolling through that, and I saw that just before we went on the air, and I said, oh, this would be interesting to talk about. But I do know that a lot of the museums, what they try to do is there's probably a lot of matching with donors and saying, we're going to sell this, and there's a lot of work behind the scenes that we wouldn't be privy to of, hey, we do need funds and soliciting supporters to make sure that they can that they have an enduring legacy.
Well, I think also it depends on what, let's say, for example, a Wyeth is in the in your museum. And let's say that you are trying to, you're having financial problems. It depends on what your financial problems are. If you're trying to build a Wyeth wing, well, you know, would you want to sell that? If you're trying to make payroll, that's a different thing. So a lot of these smaller museums are just trying to make payroll. So I mean, there are other considerations, I think, that have to be taken under consideration. So one size is not going to fit all in this, and it's unfortunate that it's coming to this. But I think I'm hoping that this too shall pass at some point.
Sure. But from another perspective, and this is just from the appraisal perspective and also from the auction perspective, is that having a piece that has been on exhibit and is coming from a museum also adds provenance. So that's another aspect of the value characteristics of the actual item, is that what is going to add to the piece is that depending on the museum that it was at and how long it's been in their collection and who owned it before it was accessioned accepted by the museum. All of those things really add up too. So it's not a simple process. And this is what we're trying to, I think this is what we're getting at to summarize everything that we've just stated, is that it's not as simple as, oh yeah, let's just put this up for auction. Is that let's look at all of the different value characteristics that go into the actual item, and what is this going to bring, and how is this going to help us and help the museum move forward? Because obviously, if the piece is going to be sold, there's also the PR aspect to it, and how do you put a positive spin on it and saying, in these days of COVID, here's what's going on. And in these pandemic times, it is, you have to think outside of the box. And it's interesting, I was asked by the NAA, I'm doing a presentation tomorrow on the rekindling, the entrepreneurial spirit, is that, yeah, we've all felt this really kind of punch in the gut, basically, over what's been going on. And we have to reinvent everything and re-look at things that we've just taken for granted, systems that we've had in place. And now we have to think outside of the box. We have to think in a different way that we'll be able to sustain not only our business and continue to make money, but do it in a different way that's going to be safe and also innovative, that will draw the individuals that you need to your business.
You know, it's interesting because we're talking about this in, like you said, in the pandemic sense of the word, but this Berkshire Museum thing happened almost 2.5 years. It started out 3 years ago, and it took about 1.5 years to come to its conclusion. And like you said, it had all it had to do was about the survival of the museum, what the legal restrictions were with what they had in. It turned basically artist against artist, and sometimes museums against artists, artists against museums. It was really just an unbelievable tangled mess that I think, at least still even now, affects the image of the Berkshire Museum in Pittsfield. I mean, I'm not saying it affects it negatively all the time, but it definitely has affected the way the museum is looked at.
No, oh, definitely. Absolutely.
Marshall, I agree. And even the what Greg was talking about, the Elliott Museum that we were working with when we were on the collections committee, prior to us being on the collections committee, when we moved down here 20 some odd years ago, they did a fire sale, basically, and it was all fire memorabilia, that's pun intended. They had fire buckets, and they had all these different things because they felt that it didn't fit their part of the collection. And they did an auction in the parking lot. And Greg, do you remember that? We went to that
auction. I do.
We bought, I think, a fire bucket or something that we gave to my brother, who was a fireman at the time. But the local press, and it was the same thing, Marshall, the local press just said, how dare they? Why would I give my stuff if they're going to just do this down the line? And the museum, they're supposed to hold on to it forever, and it's, you know, this and that. But the museum was hurting. And it was a whole thing. And I think that it's still, there are some people that remember that.
Yes. just as you were saying, Marshall, with the museum in Pittsfield. Yeah. It's the same thing here. Every time someone brings that up, it's like picking a scab of a wound. It's still a very, very raw thing to a lot of people, because there were vintage cars that were sold that were donated by families.
Oh, yeah, there and were some fire, of the fire trucks.
Full-size fire truck.
They should have held on to, because they do have a car collection.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think that they had a curator or someone from the museum staff also help pick and choose. I think it was, there was a lot more to it, which we weren't privy to, and I don't know. That's just speculation, but in looking at it, I think there were things that could have probably stayed in the museum, but unfortunately were then sold. And of course, once they're sold, you can't get them back.
Yeah,
they did raise the money. They were able to keep the doors open. You know, so there's a lot of pros and cons, and there's a lot of publicity spin, not spin, but you do have to put a spin on it and say, here's why. And you have to let people know why it is and what's going on. A lot harder than right now. I think it's a very different climate. I think, especially as we're, what, you know, seven months into this pandemic, is that people are understanding businesses are hurting. They cannot survive. And we do have to look at things differently. We do have to change the rules a little bit and get a different perspective and say, how can we now survive? And if going through and selling one of those things is an answer, then we need to explore it and go through with it.
You know how times have changed. When I was a kid in the summertime, my mother would take us, if my father was, like, one year my father was out in Las Vegas, we went out there in the fall, okay? And where mm-hmm. did we go? We went to the dam, the Hoover Dam. We always would go to Washington every year in the springtime, visit all the museums. As a young kid in New York, we'd go to New York a lot, visit the museums. And back then, I was so young. I don't even know. I think we probably didn't even pay to go in back yep. then in the museums. But if you want to learn from your history, and you want to learn, and then this includes art and natural history and American history and world history, museums are a necessity. And when they
most definitely,
it's bad enough when they're open to make profit.
Yes.
and it's not really profits, it's to reinvest in them.
It's ends meet.
Yeah,
it's to make ends meet.
You know, just imagine if there's no Holocaust museum, just imagine if there's no space museum, just imagine
yes.
the different museums all around here. I mean, we had the Holly House here in Lakeville and really had to close because they couldn't afford to keep it open, and then they actually ended up selling the house and putting it into the Salisbury Association, which kept the Salisbury Association afloat. I mean, these are all yeah. big questions, and you know what? There's no correct or non-correct answer to it. I mean,
I agree. You're exactly right, and I think that you have to take it. There's context. You have to look at the context of. And the time period. This is why we had to do what we did. Now, we may look back in 10 years and say, boy, it's a good thing that we were able to do that because, look, we're still here and we're able to move forward. But like you said, there's no right or wrong. It's we need to do what we need to do in this time in order to survive.
All right, guys. I didn't realize the conversation would go where it went, but I'm glad that it did.
Absolutely.
This was great.
Thanks,
yeah, this was a very important topic. Very important
topic. Yes. Let's
give kudos to the boss, Jill Goodman. All right.
Who? Jill?
She's
JG.
She's the
who?
Boss.
Jill, who? I haven't heard her for so long, I forgot who she was.
Hello,
Jill.
She's still the same. Okay. All right, guys. I'll speak.
Our best to both of you.
All right, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay.
Okay, Mark.
Take care,
buddy.
Tim Luke and Craig Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This here on Robinhood Radio. Of course, you can find them at tqag.com on the web.